Rise Up Chorus presents Meet the Musicians Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Lapine. Now, let's meet the musicians. Welcome to the sixth episode of Meet the Musicians Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Lapine, and I'm thrilled to be leading you through a musician's story. I'm excited today that I have the opportunity to speak with a performer whose acting and singing has brought him to stages around the country. He was most recently seen as Avram in the very successful off-Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish. Our guest is Kirk Gerritano, and we're excited to welcome him to our musical community. Kirk, welcome to Meet the Musicians Podcast.
Thank you. Such a thrill to be here with you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I love this part of what I get to do. I love meeting new people and talking with people and learning about people. So let's get on with it. So when did you first realize that you had an interest in music and an interest in acting?
Well, that takes me back to when I was 6 years old. I grew up in Edison, New Jersey. I went to Woodbrook Elementary School. And when I was in first grade, a man named Michael Taubenslag, who runs Taubenslag Productions, which does shows all across New Jersey and in New York, he has a program for schools called Theater Week, which is essentially he takes one of his shows to a school and he teaches the kids the show in a week. And, you know, we start on Monday and by Friday, we're on a stage at a different school doing the show. So I just decided to do it to see if I would like it at, you know, the tender age of 6 years old. And the show that he brought to us was The Rotten Princess, which was about this princess who was misbehaving, and her parents, the king and queen, couldn't do anything to marry her off to a suitor. She would always mistreat all the suitors, and the kingdom was in trouble and in peril. You know, it's great children's show material. The way we learned the show was through repetition. There were no scripts, so he would tell us what to say. He would say our lines, and we would repeat it back to him. And from doing that over and over again throughout the course of rehearsal, that's how we memorized our lines, which has helped me down the line. But I played the Italian suitor, Prince Luigi, and I brought a box of Italian fire ants as my gift to the princess. And of course, the princess is not very well mannered, so she took the box and promptly dumped it on my head. And I got to run around the stage screaming, "I got ants in my pants! I got ants in my pants!" And literally and metaphorically, the acting bug bit me right then and there. As soon as I got the audience on my side and laughing at me and just having a great time, I was like, "Wow, this is really fun!" And all I had to do was just be big and be funny and be crazy. I get to just express myself. So yeah, that's the first time where I really like was exposed to music and performance and performing music.
Wow. So you went to Woodbrook. I think that's just so funny. My oldest son goes to Woodbrook now. Yeah. It's a small world, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
So did you sing when you were at Woodbrook? Were you in the elementary school chorus?
I was. I think that we started to actually like be in the choir. We were like in fourth and fifth grade. My music teacher there was Ida Gamboa. She was a wonderful woman. Back when I was very young, I really couldn't sing at all. My parents, when I was like between the ages of like 3 and 8 years old, my parents were wondering if I was tone deaf, and not without good cause, because I really couldn't sing. And it's a weird thing when I started to take choir and I started to be around like kids who could sing well, and I heard what they sounded like, I was like, let me try to imitate that sound, you know? And in doing that, I kind of, in my childlike way, accidentally stumbled upon the right ways to position my mouth and my throat. And it was just kind of like, all of a sudden I could sing. And everyone was like, "What? You couldn't sing before. How can you just suddenly sing now?" And I was just like, "I don't know. I like it." So it was just a great experience for me in elementary school, finally figuring out how to sing.
That's probably the actor side of you coming out. You know, when you think of all these great actors who are incredible imitators, comedians who do great impersonations, right? They all have the ability to sing well because they impersonate a good singer. They take the sound, they hear the sound, and then they make the sound. And, you know, that's sort of what we do as singers and what we do as singing teachers is we help people find their own sound, but by introducing them to sounds similar to what they would be looking to achieve. And it sounds like what you did was the exact same thing. And you had a brilliant music teacher in elementary school, let me tell you. And the students that she has had and the lives that she's touched, it's pretty astounding.
Yeah, she was just a wonderful person to me, always wonderful to every student that she ever contacted. So I'm very grateful to have had her early on in my musical life.
Oh, that's so cool. So what other experiences did you have? Maybe in the school level, did you do community theater?
Well, after I did the Theater Week production with Michael Taubensog, that encouraged me to go to his summer camp that was held at Middlesex County College for many years. But Taubensog Theater Camp is where I really started to learn how to perform. And the one thing that he always taught us was to be big and to be loud and to make sure that everybody could hear you all the way in the back. And he, even to this day, when we have conversations, he always tells me, the one thing I taught you was how to not be boring on stage. And that is so true. Because when you're acting, it's so much easier to just be big and show somebody everything you have. And they can be like, okay, let's pick a couple of things that we like from that. Versus, you know, being a little, you know, more reserved and they have to kind of pull it out of you. It's a little harder to work from an acting standpoint that way. But yeah, I went to his camp and I learned that method of acting from a very young age. I went there for years and years from first grade all the way up till I was a freshman in high school. And then after that, I worked at his camp. I was a counselor. And then I eventually became a head counselor of his. And I ran the Teen Scenes program that he had. Which was basically for the 8th and 9th graders in the camp, instead of being in the children's shows, because, you know, most of them had done that and it was like a little too young for their age, they would get to do something a little more age appropriate, like a middle school type show. And we would talk about acting, like the basics of like serious acting and things like that, and play improv games, which was always popular. So I did that for a couple years. And, you know, once I began to go to college and graduated and was getting started on my professional career, that's when I left the camp to be a pro.
So it sounds like your family was very supportive of your acting and of your music from a young age.
Oh yes, I was very blessed with a very supportive family. They're always behind me whenever I, you know, go and after my dreams, and they've never once tried to discourage me from going after it. As soon as I said, you know, this is what I want to do, They respected my decision. And, you know, they saw me, you know, in all the high school productions that I did, and they saw what I could do. And they were like, you know what, I think you might have something here, you know, so we're going to get behind you and whatever you want to do. Like, we're going to support you 100%. My family is actually there's a couple musicians in my family, too. So I think they understand it in that way. My grandfather on my mother's side, whose books are behind me, he was an English professor, but he also was a musician. He played the guitar and the harmonica. He was part of a harmonica club in New Jersey. And he played in bands and everything. And he was very musical and he sang too. And on my father's side, my father's father, my grandfather, was a flute player. So, and my mom sings. My mom's a very good singer. So musicianship runs throughout my family. And I think that had an impact on them being so supportive of me in my theatrical endeavors later in life.
Oh, sure. It makes a huge difference when you have parents who recognize your love, the need for you to do this, and then also the gift that you had, and so that they were willing to do what needed to be done to help you cultivate that gift, to help you cultivate that love. It's a beautiful thing when it weds together like that.
It was wonderful. I was very, very lucky, very blessed.
Yeah. So you, when you left, you know, high school, you went to college at Montclair State, correct?
Yes, I did. I did.
And what was your major there?
I majored in musical theater. So I just went for it. BFA, Bachelor of Fine Arts.
That's one of the great musical theater programs in the area. I mean, in the region, it's a phenomenal program with an incredible reputation.
Yeah, I really liked it. I first got wind of it when I did this summer youth theater, New Jersey Youth Theater, my junior year of high school, And most of the people who were doing that were from Montclair State. And, you know, getting to perform with them and see the kind of talent that they have, I was like, maybe I should take a look at this school. And I took a look at it, and I just saw, like, it was evolving. It was constantly evolving. It was on the rise. It wasn't like this stagnant program that thought it already had all the answers and we're not going to add anything to the curriculum. They're constantly adding things to the curriculum. They're constantly adapting to students' needs. And I instantly got that feeling, you know, when I first visited and started to talk to some people from there. So I thought to myself, this is a program on the rise, and it's close to New York. You know, it's just a train ride away. So they get a lot of people in from the city for master classes and stuff. So a lot of connections there. And the faculty is just superb. They're just wonderful people. And they're really helpful in not only educating you on how to be an actor, but how to be a professional in the business, which was another thing that really attracted me. So I got excellent education from Montclair State University, from their BFA musical theater program. And I'm very proud to be a Red Hawk.
When, you know, Montclair is still being, they're still innovative in the field of the arts. Even right now, with everything that has gone on over the last 10 plus months because of the COVID-19 pandemic, they found ways to reinvent what we're doing. I've seen what Heather Buchanan has done with her choral ensembles and what the bands and the orchestras have done with rehearsing in the parking deck. And then performing out in the amphitheater, just some incredible things that, you know, just really innovative ways to keep music going and keep theater and keep the arts going when it's not safe to perform together or sing or play together inside. And that has hit you, I'm sure, very hard in the theater world. You and your friends and colleagues, what is the, I don't want to get too deep into the COVID weeds, but what is the general affect in the world of theater these days?
Well, the main impact that it's had is that everything has moved to being virtual. Like every production that is being put on, every kind of performance is always online, on Zoom, some other kind of platform. So, you know, as actors, we always have to adapt to new situations. So, you know, I'm proud of the theater community for adapting the way that they did and, you know, just moving and, you know, through the online realm and, you know, working through the bugs and the kinks and just pushing forward like we always do to try and to find a new space to perform. And I mean, it's just been wonderful. I think we've just explored this new arena of theater that, I mean, we can continue this virtual theater going forward alongside the in-person stuff. And we've just explored a whole new realm now, and we're more informed now because of it, I think, of how we can make theater, and it's a new way of making art. So, you know, in a way, it's a benefit. But I mean, obviously, we'd all like to just be back in a theater performing live for people, connecting, you know, right there with people. There's just no real substitute for that. And auditioning as well, you know, in person, you know, there's just nothing that can really, truly replace the in-person audition, in my opinion.
What are some of the online things that you've found yourself doing?
Well, I've done a lot for the National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne recently, the company that produced Yiddish Fiddler on the Roof. I was part of a reading that they did over the summer called It Can't Happen Here. It was actually a collaborative effort between the Volksbühne and I think 6 or 7 other foreign language theater companies. So each company had like a couple scenes to perform in their language. So once it was all put together, the entire play was like in 7 different languages, and it kept getting passed back and forth from language to language. And it was very reflective of, it's by Sinclair Lewis. It was originally written in the 1930s, I believe. And it's reflective of our American society today and kind of where we are politically, and it was just a very relevant piece. So I did that over the summer, and I was very proud to be part of that. Recently with them, I did their Hanukkah Spectacular, which was really fun. Just great way to bring some joy into the homes of everybody, you know, for the holiday season. There were some great people attached to it. It was names like Billy Crystal and Joel Gray, our director, and just so many, and Jackie Hoffman, who was in Fiddler as well, played Yenta, a dear friend of mine now. Just a wonderful array of talent from across the world coming together to bring light to the Hanukkah season. And an upcoming project that we just completed for next Tuesday, January 19th at 10 a.m. on the Folksbina website, nytf.org, we'll be premiering a video of many of the Yiddish Fiddler cast members singing God Bless America in Yiddish called Gott Bench Amerika. So it's the night before the inauguration, and we're trying to usher in a new era of hope and healing into America, and just trying to do our part to, you know, to bring some light into the country in these troubling times. So that's mainly what I've done. I've also done a voiceover gig recently for Arts Power National Touring Theater. They do a lot of children's theater, and they have an on-demand service. That's how they moved into the virtual realm, and they do like read-alongs, and I did a read-along of The Monster Who Ate My Peas. So that was my first ever voiceover gig. So
cool.
The virtual world is just giving me some opportunities I might not have gotten otherwise.
Did you enjoy the voiceover thing?
I loved it. It was so much fun just to, you know, break out the microphone and try different voices and, you know, in different inflections, and to critique myself too. It's very much like a self-critique kind of thing before you send in the demos. So just to kind of like, you know, have that evaluation going on with myself, that conversation. So it was really fun. And I think the final product was really cool too.
Do you think that when we are able to safely go back and perform again in person, in a live theater, do you think that Broadway, for example, is going to go back to the old 8-show-a-week model? Or do you think the whole model is going to have to change?
I think initially there's probably going to be some, you know, it's going to feel different, in my opinion, just because we can't go right back to normal. We have to make sure that, you know, everyone's safe and everyone's protected. So I don't think it's going to be just like jumping back into the before times immediately. I don't know if that's going to manifest itself in reducing the amount of shows per week, or reducing house capacity, or implementing several different safety measures across the board. Actors Equity has been, doing everything that they can to perfect safety methods, and they've been consulting with doctors and scientists, and they've been doing everything they can to try and get their members back to work and just to set the standard for the theater community, both union and non-union. So I think it is going to be different initially, but I think, you know, eventually we will get back to that pre-COVID norm that we all love so much.
We sure do. One of the hardest parts about, again, I'm using Broadway because it's so easy for people to picture Broadway, but some of those theaters are very, very old. And, you know, with COVID, there's been a lot of talk about HVAC systems that run efficiently, that run well, with how many air exchanges per hour, things like that. Has there been a lot of work in the theaters themselves to upgrade the infrastructure of these old, beautiful buildings?
I don't know personally whether that's been happening. I have heard that, you know, the structures of buildings have been looked at through various news articles and things like that. I just think they have to look at whatever option that they can at this point to try and get, to get the buildings to be safe too. You know, we can't, I feel you can't leave any stone unturned at this point. You gotta get the artists back to work. You gotta get the theaters open again when it's safe. You know, you gotta do everything you can to make it safe enough to open theaters back up again. So if that's something that needs to be done, if the HVAC systems need to be installed, or the air systems need to be overhauled, you know, I say do whatever you can to make it happen.
Yeah, and audiences are sitting on the edge of their seats. They want theaters and orchestras and choruses and everything. They just want everything open again. Hopefully we're getting there soon, right? Fingers crossed, we'll get there very soon. So now that you're a working professional actor and musician, right? Is there ongoing training? I mean, you're always learning from the people that you're working with, I'm sure, but what about continuing education for you? Do you take additional classes, or are you now at the point where you're teaching the classes more?
I'm kind of at the point where I'm more on the teacher side of it. I've taught a couple audition workshops recently for high school students. But, you know, as you, when you look back towards who you're teaching, you always have to look forward to who can teach you as well. So you can always go back to class. You know, there's always somebody that you can learn from. In this COVID time, I've kind of taken myself to class by making sure I use this time to read a lot of plays that I might not have had time to read before. So I'm just reading a lot of like theater books and acting books and, you know, going through these plays and trying to apply my acting training to these different characters and trying to read it critically to keep my acting muscle strong and to also expand my knowledge of theater literature. So, I mean, sometimes you just got to take yourself to school and you just got to take all the techniques and stuff that your teachers have taught you and kind of create your own environment where you can apply them, you know, even if you're not on stage doing that on a nightly basis anymore.
Mm. Now that you've been in Fiddler and some of the other productions that you've been in, you've had the chance to work with some really well-known professionals. Is there anyone in particular that you feel like you've just learned so much from just being around them, or maybe they've given you advice along the way?
Oh, there's quite a few. I gotta start with Joel Gray. I mean, he was the director of Yiddish Fiddler on the Roof, and he's just so brilliant as an actor, and because of that, he's so brilliant as a director as far as, you know, interacting with the actors, because he's an actor's director. Like, he knows how to talk to us, and he knows just what to say to make the acting just come alive and to get really to the heart of the matter. His philosophy is simplicity, making everything simple. So that's why our Fiddler show was just so bare bones. There wasn't a big set. It was just so much about the storytelling, and the acting just really reflected that. Because I came from the school of acting very big, so he really knew just how to get the particular color out of me for whatever scene I was trying to do or whatever moment was happening. So Joel Gray really taught me a lot. And Steven Skybell, who played Tevye, was just wonderful as well. Just because I got to see him work every night, just to watch him from the wings do what he does best. And he's just so experienced. He's done stage, Broadway, TV, like, and he just brings all of that talent and that natural charisma to the role. And every moment is just so present and so grounded and so real. And, you know, just being next to him on stage, interacting with him as Avram. And I also understudied a couple different roles. I understudied Muttel the tailor, Laser Wolf, and Mordechai the innkeeper. When I was on for Muttel a couple times, just doing that scene with him and Seidel, just having that scene with him, just it raised my game so much, just acting with him for that long in that scene. It's just you can just learn so much from somebody just by watching them work so much. So those are two people that recently that I've really learned a lot from.
I've always been so impressed with actors that are doing these long-term shows, whether it's a Broadway or off-Broadway or a national tour, but something that's going for months and months or years, their ability to come out every night with the same role, but give it that same fresh take that they did on that very first night. That is, you know, I don't think people think about that when they go to a show. You know, they don't go to an evening show that happened on a Wednesday and realize, oh, they've just done it already today or whatever. You know, they're seeing the show that and it's still fresh. How do you do that?
It really is about trusting yourself. It goes back to the preparation, because you have to be confident that you know what you're doing. You know what the foundation is. You know the skeleton of the show. You know the anatomy of it backwards and forwards. So that's never a question. So you have that going for you. So you can always fall back on that. And having that very well prepared allows you to really focus in on your fellow actors and just really connect with them and connect with what's happening right now, what's happening this minute, as opposed to what happened yesterday or what's supposed to happen, you know? So you really can have a little fun. You can throw something new at somebody, and because they're so prepared with the foundation, they can receive it and then react to it and then throw something new back at you, and then you start to create a fresh moment. And especially when you're doing a very long run of a show, it's kind of vital for the mental, you know, health of the actors to keep finding new things, and for the health of the show in general, to keep finding these new things, to keep it a living piece as opposed to just a repeated piece that just keeps happening the same way every night. So it really just all goes back to preparation and being able to give and receive new things every night.
So sometimes someone might deliver a line to you slightly differently than they normally do, and you adjust, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You adjust because, you know, you're not thrown by it. If you're prepared enough, you're not thrown by it. And it's a gift. When something new happens like that, you get to explore something different with this person. And maybe it's better than what you had before, and maybe you keep it. The worst thing that could possibly happen is, oh, that wasn't great. We won't do that next time, you know? But you're not going to get in trouble unless you do something completely off the wall, like you tear down the set when you're not supposed to. But then that goes back to your professionalism. So if you're a professional, that doesn't happen. But yeah, it's I always say making a mistake is only a mistake if you let the audience know it was a mistake. Mistakes are gifts. They're opportunities to explore something new.
It reminds me of being in college. My piano teacher in college, the incredible Lillian Livingston, used to say, mistakes when you're playing the piano, mistakes are made in rhythm with expression. It becomes part of that living piece of music. And we have to remember that, whether it's with playing the piano or singing or acting or a student in school delivering a speech or a presentation. It's done in the moment, and you make it part of that presentation. It's an exciting lesson for people to learn.
Absolutely.
So in your acting or singing world, is there an actor or a musician that you aspire to be like?
Well, singing wise, I've always loved Josh Groban's voice. I feel like, you know, my voice kind of falls in the kind of style that his is. He kind of has a fusion of like golden age sound and contemporary sound. And I've kind of aspired to capture the best of both worlds in my voice too, as a baritone. I kind of lie more on the classical side of things. I'm still working on grabbing that contemporary sound convincingly. I've been working on it all my life. I'll probably continue to work on it all my life and hopefully get a little better at it. But yeah, Josh Groban's voice has just been wonderful. And I saw him in The Great Comet a couple years ago, and his acting's pretty good too. So, I mean, if I could have a career like his, I certainly would not complain. He's fantastic.
He has a pretty good career, doesn't he? Oh, man. So are there projects that are in the works now for a post-COVID world that you have?
Not officially yet. I mean, there are a couple like maybe things that might happen that, you know, I can't really talk about them until they become solid, but, you know, it's just kind of maybe things that might be happening. But the most recent upcoming project is the Yiddish God Bless America that I just can't wait to see the final product of next week. I'm just so excited. The cast worked so hard on it. Our Bobit Seidel, Lisa Fishman, she came up with the idea, and it was just so brilliant. And she coordinated everybody's involvement. And Ben Liebert, our Muttel, volunteered his time and his talents to produce and edit the video. And he's very good at that. So I'm so eager to see all those wonderful faces on the same screen again. And it's always a joy to see them, whether in person or just, you know, pre-recorded. I just can't wait for that.
Oh, so you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait.
Oh, okay. It's always interesting when the performers don't get to see the final product of these video things that are coming out.
Yeah.
Oh. You're young. You've done so many incredible things already. Is there something that you are most proud of?
I think I'm just proud of, you know, having done it so much so far, you know, just sticking to my dream and, you know, being a working actor and developing good relationships and, you know, having companies think that I'm a good enough person to hire me back repeatedly. I think that's something, an aspect of my career that I'm very proud of, is that I've built good relationships with companies. So I've had like multiple gigs from the same company. Like I've worked with George Street Playhouse several times. They gave me my first ever contract. I was part of their educational touring theater, which toured around New Jersey and parts of Pennsylvania and New York. And, you know, I've worked with them on several different projects. And then Arts Power National Touring Theater. I've had a great relationship with them. I did the voiceover for them, as I said earlier in the podcast, and I did three national tours with them across the country in Canada. Just a great relationship with Gary and Mark Blackman, who are twin brother producers of Arts Power and founders. And the Folkspina, too, just developed a great relationship with them. I love everything that they do. I love the Yiddish theater. I didn't speak any Yiddish before I came to the Folkspina. And I only knew the classic Yiddish words, Mishuge, you know, Oyvei. And I discovered this whole new beautiful language and theater because of them. And they keep bringing me back. And I'm so happy to come back for them and work for them. And just wonderful. Like, you develop, as actors, you develop little families everywhere you go. If you do it the right way, you develop little families. And those families always welcome you back. And you always welcome them back into your life. And it's just such a wonderful feeling to have those kinds of relationships with different companies across the board. So I think I'm really proud that I've been able to build those relationships throughout my career so far.
Relationships is a really important word for young actors to remember. Yes, it is so important to learn your craft. Yes, it is so important to excel at what you do. But you have to build relationships. We hear so many stories of the tyrannical actors that nobody wants to work with, and they might be the best that ever lived at their craft, and maybe they'll get hired, but they're the people that nobody wants to be around. And so those relationships, it's crucial, because people will be willing to take a chance on you. People will be willing to help train you and teach you what you need, anything that you might need, because you built that relationship with them. So bravo on doing that.
Thank you so much. I always say, whenever I do an audition workshop, talent is only half the battle. Being a good person is the other half, and it's a very important half. So I'm just glad that many companies view me that way, and I'm glad that I've been able to build those relationships.
Oh, I love that so much. Are there any roles on your bucket list?
Oh,
if you have
yes.
such a thing.
Oh, yes. My top role that I have to play before I die is Sweeney Todd. I have to. It's just, I've done Sweeney Todd three times. I did it once in high school. I played Ooh. Anthony, because I was, 16. So that's the age appropriate role. And then for the New Jersey Youth Theater, where I met all those Montclair State people, we did Sweeney Todd and I played Pirelli. So I used a lot of my falsetto and my clown acting in that one. And then my freshman year of college in Montclair State, I played Judge Turpin. So I'm like getting closer. So hopefully the next time I do Sweeney, hopefully, maybe 5, 10 years, 20 years down the road, I can finally play the big guy. And it's just such a juicy, well-rounded, deep character, because the trap for that role is this guy's a monster. And, he's a human being. He's the whole point of the role is that he has been driven by all of these successive bad events that aren't his fault to this murderous rage that overtakes him and swallows him. It swallows what he used to be. And it's such a wonderful arc to play and to try and make that character, vile and repulsive, but also sympathetic. Like, I feel so bad for this person, for what they've gone through. I don't condone what they've done at all, but my God, he's had a horrible life. He's just a human being like you or me. So that's the role that I need to play before I die.
Ooh, any others?
Don Quixote from Men of La Mancha. Impossible Dream, the song. It was my college audition song. It's a song I worked on with my first voice teacher, Ashley Mondragon, who was also the musical director for my high school theater program, which directed by Darlene Rich. Two very influential people in my life. I wouldn't be here without Darlene Rich or Ashley Mondragon. So they really worked with me on that song to get me into college. And that's what got me in to Montclair State. That just singing that song the way that I did, the way that they got me to sing it. So it's always held a special place in my heart. And again, that character is just such a wonderful character.
It's a great show, but that song, it always stands out, and so many young baritones will sing that for auditions or just look for any excuse to pull that one out. It's an old war horse. One thing that, if there are younger people listening that might be aspiring musicians, aspiring actors, Do you have any moments in your life where you really doubted yourself, and how did you get through that?
Oh, there were plenty of moments where I doubted myself as an actor, as a singer. You know, you really just gotta have an honest conversation with yourself, you know, and really talk to yourself and see how badly do I want this, you know? Is this something that I really want? Can I see myself doing something else? Will I be unhappier having not tried to do this rather than taking another route? And for me, the answer was yes. I would have been haunted my whole life if I hadn't given this a try. You know, you really gotta just take a moment and forgive yourself too. You have to learn to forgive yourself for these moments of doubt, because everybody has them. You know, everybody has these moments of doubt of, you know, can I do this? Am I good enough? But you are good enough. You just have to invest in yourself. You have to believe in yourself, especially when you get to a point where, you know, you're in a college program already, you've been accepted, and you're having these feelings. You know, then it's like, well, I got here, so they must see something in me. Or even before then, if people are telling you, you can do this, you should go to college for this, it's like, well, they must see something in me, you know? They're not all lying to me, you know? So I must have some kind of gift or some kind of talent that's gotten me to this point where I'm on the cusp of, you know, making this decision. So it's just really developing that sense of self-belief, and even just talking to the people that you trust the most, and teachers that have been there for you. Like, again, my high school theater director, also my high school choir director, Diane Wyans. She was a great inspiration for me. She really taught me a lot musically. She gave me my sense of relative pitch. She taught me how to sight read, and she was always behind me too, encouraging me to go for it. And, you know, you just really just believe in yourself. Like, it all comes down to you. You have to give it a go. If you really want it, you got to give it a go, because if you don't, it's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you can pivot, you know, just trust yourself. Trust what you're feeling. Trust what you're thinking.
It's very easy for those of us who are going into the arts to have self-doubt. And there's a very fine line that I think great artists have to walk. And on one side of that line is self-doubt, which can lead to depression and some other scary things. Then there's the other side of the line that leads you to being cocky, being full of yourself. And there's a very humble line that I think all of us have to walk, that some days when we're feeling like we just can't do it anymore, we have to kind of push ourselves the other way, you know, but I can do it and I have done it. And as soon as you're starting to feel a little too much pride, well, that's why you need people in your life to knock you back down to the other side, you know?
Right.
And that's a hard concept for a 16, 17, 18-year-old who's thinking about a career in the arts to find that equilibrium, because they don't know where it is or what it feels like. Do you have any advice for someone of that age?
Sure. Especially when you're that young, like, and there's just so much in front of you, you know, so much that you feel like you have to accomplish before you can have a steady career in the arts. It can seem very intimidating. Like, there's just so much in front of you. Some people tend to think of it as like a mountain that they have to climb. I tend to think of it more as like a journey, a straight line on a path. So it's not like, oh my God, I have to climb this huge thing to get where I need to go to get to the top of this. It's, I'm on this journey. You know, there's space to learn in front of me. There's growth that's happened behind me. So that's always going to be the case. You're going to have moments where it's like you're going to stop on the path and be like, wow, this is a really beautiful clearing that I've made it to. You know, this is a wonderful place. Because I've walked this far, I can stop and I can take a moment to breathe and just take in the sunshine and all the nature around me. But the path always goes forward. There's always more to walk. And that's just life. You know, it's all, not to use a cliche, but to use a cliche, it's all about the journey, not the destination. We're always on the journey. You know, the journey never stops. So just don't think of it as a mountain to climb. Don't think of peaks and valleys. Think of just the straight path sometimes you're going to go through the woods, but then it's going to lead to a clearing. As long as you stay on the path, you're going to get to that clearing, and you'll know when it's there because you'll just feel the sunshine hit your face, and you'll be like, here I am.
I like that picture, too, of the path and the journey as opposed to the mountain, because if you're doing it right, you never really make it to the top of the mountain, because as soon as you reach your life goal, you have a new one, and then you have a new one, and then you have a new one. And so you make that clearing, and then you're into the woods again, and then you walk through the path, and you're in that new clearing. And for you, when you achieve the role of Don Quixote or Sweeney Todd, and then you'll have a new goal. And it's that same thing. No, that's a really nice way to think about it. What do the words rise up mean to you and in your life?
Rise up to me means to keep going, to persist despite any obstacles that might be placed in your path, to overcome anything that might be put in front of you, to always bring your best self into every situation, to really learn, you know, what your strengths and weaknesses are, and to always play to your strengths, and to not let anybody bring you down into your weaknesses, to know who you are as a person, and to just be confident in that, and to be who you are, just at your best, and just confident in yourself, and to always rise above.
That is such an important life lesson. And that's sort of what we've been talking about this whole podcast today, isn't it? It's knowing who you are, trusting who you are, and using that to move forward on the path.
Absolutely.
Oh, Kirk, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our podcast audience?
If you're considering a career in the arts, go for it. Just trust your instinct. If you really want to go for it, go for it. Take classes, develop a work ethic, really prepare, and you can do it. You are good enough, so trust yourself.
Thank you so much, Kirk. I am so grateful that you were able to join us today, and don't be a stranger. Come visit, reach out anytime. I'd love to stay in touch and know what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was such a wonderful way to spend an evening.
Well, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you. Meet the Musicians podcast is produced by Rise Up Chorus, a community music organization whose focus is on bringing the community together to sing. For more information about Rise Up Chorus, visit us online at www.riseupchorus.org. This is Matthew Lapine saying thank you so much for listening. We can't wait to have you join us again for our next episode when we meet the musicians.